Speaking out on ABC Radio.
We are here.
Indigenous culture, lifestyle and current affairs with Larissa Behrendt.
Well, this weekend, the annual Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras was held in Sydney, marking 39 years since the initial protests that sparked the event. The Mardi Gras Festival has grown into a month-long event featuring a range of cultural and artistic programs and exhibitions. The diversity of the LGBTI community is reflected in the lineup, and for the first time this year included a history of Indigenous involvement in the parade. Tim Bishop has researched that history and Bonnie Briggs has lived it. Bonnie, how long have you been involved with Mardi Gras and what does it mean to you?
It means a lot. It's just about not the entirety of what drives me as an Aboriginal woman or identifies as being a gay woman, queer woman, but it certainly takes up a huge amount of pride in terms of that self and what drives me for equality and just that thing of owning yourself and your body and having that pride in knowing exactly why you love someone and how important that is and to be loved.
And how long have you been involved with the parade? Look,
I guess if I think about how I started as a marshal, we were renowned. We gave out sparklers, mints and things like that. And that was with another group that was driven by a woman called Shelley Ray sitting on it. But when I became working on the floats, I'm pretty sure it was around the time that Tim was probably working on it, and we worked down at the old, what was then the very, very fantastic Greg Etock and Kathy Etock gave us access to a space down in Woolloomooloo, and it's always very much been a community thing. But I just want to acknowledge something, because I know that at some point there'll be a little bit of, and that's about probably who was involved with the 1988 float and that, and I wasn't on that. But I know there are a lot of people, and there's certainly a number of people that have since passed. And I think about that float, and I think about Lynette Miller, and I think about Malcolm Cole, and, you know, Malcolm was my hero, still is. And that was pre-88, and that was when I came down and pretty much hanging out with all the Tramby mob, and it's certainly, when I look back now and I think about the people and mob, because I've also lived in a house when I was homeless by one of the very, very, very original non-Aboriginal people, Lynn Broadfield, who was there, you know, back in the 70s and things like that. So I've kind of had an edge on it and an information sheet directed at me for this, because it was an incredible way of gaining access to that information. But also as a First Nations woman from Moree, and that thing about discrimination and everything else. So it was just another platform and a very, very powerful base to build yourself from. So I guess I've been involved for a long time. I haven't done year after float, but that's also because behind the scenes and things, it's working. It's looking at the ways of getting people involved in that. And also over the last X amount of years, there have been times where it's like, you know what, I want this to come back to the community space.
Well, you talk about the great sense of community you had with people then and now, but what was it like for you having to navigate across the worlds of, you know, being gay with the Aboriginal community and then also being Aboriginal in terms of how the LGBTI community? Was there less tolerance then than now, or has it always been sort of a welcoming space?
No, totally less tolerant. I got assaulted really badly in my hometown last year. Really, really badly. It's something where a police charges should have been held, and I was called every filthy lesbian name you can imagine. So tolerance, no, don't have that umbrella of 100% to keep that off. But I think I'm almost flawless in my approach to just wanting that better space. And in having said that, I think there's a high level of tolerance. I think most people that know my mum would say that she's tolerant for them. But I push that boundary, Larissa. It's the same way I am as proud as being Aboriginal. I believe we have a lot of these young people to thank for pushing these boundaries. I think that they're not wanting to be labelled, and that's what I want for the mob. I don't want that to be some continental idea that's developed out of our urban spaces. I want that to be able to transcend into our rural communities where we're seeing higher rates or because of that intolerance. You know, we have no parallel place to look at, like, is this suicide connected to the orientation? And we've known this for a long time, so I hope I'm not getting off track.
So, Tim, you've actually been involved with a research project that's sort of looking at this history that Bonnie's been sort of living. How did you get involved with it?
I got involved with the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community way back in the early 90s when I came into the community as a partner of Matthew Cook, also Bonnie's good mate, which is also, you know, how long I've known Bonnie. So, yeah, I came into the community as his partner and we married up. You know, it's interesting now when they talk about this sort of creating equality and marriage and equality, whereas we had it in our relationship. We were married, you know, and I think that's a bit of a blackfella thing too. You do get married. And when families get involved in it and support one another, you're married. Yeah. So that was the beginning of my experience in the parade. But sadly, he passed away a few years after that. And I've just stayed connected with the community where personally I sort of feel where I found like I'm home. In my relationship with Matthew, I finally sort of, you know, found my place or where I really felt comfortable.
And what have you found in the research project that you've done?
Oh, look, so much.
Give us a few great insights. Maybe things that surprised you when you were there.
Well, there was not so much surprise, but looking back, 1988, as Bonnie says, gets acknowledged as the first Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander float entered in the parade. And what I didn't know, and it was actually a little bit of the reason about why I started this project, because I went online and a lot of sites, it was getting reported that it led the parade in 1988. And of course, 1988 is the bicentenary. So you'd think it would, but it didn't lead the parade. So that became something really interesting because it's sometime later, if you look back, you think, oh, surely the blackfellas led the parade in 88. But they didn't. And yet it gets reported that way. And then with help from the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives, they were able to provide me with old sort of letters to the editor. And there was a bit of controversy at the time. It was because of 88. There was a little bit of fear being expressed by Mardi Gras about responses and reactions to floats about the bicentenary. And also I found out from the press were also stirring the pot. As I also sort of found out, you know, through the years that the gay press particularly, you know, they got in there and often stirred up things like racism and et cetera. And only just recently I found a document by the Queers for Reconciliation and they had a float started in about 1998. I found an old press release and in their press release they make mention of the first Aboriginal presence in the parade in 1980 under the banner of Black Gays. I've been able to find out little more about it, but it's interesting that it got documented because, you know, it must have happened, but even the people who wrote the article, they couldn't recall why they said this or, you know, what it was based on. But recently we had an exhibition and I put up a mock-up of the Black Gays banner just to try and draw out these stories and these memories because part of this research was also just about unravelling the years, you know, who did what when. You know, really, at the beginning, it was just about, before it's too late, let's just get down what the floats were, who did them, what year they happened, etc.
And I guess as Bonnie's saying, it's a living history that you've got. You've got an archive, but you've also got people who've lived it.
That's right.
In looking at the research that you were doing, obviously an important part of the timeline involves the community's response to HIV. What impact did you see that having?
Oh, look, incredibly. Like Bonnie talked about the 1995 float. So this is in the midst of the epidemic, and I think the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community response is only just starting in the early 90s with the first national conference out in
Alice Springs,
and which was everyone's business. So this 1995 float, organised by Vicky and David, took the name of Everyone's Business, and what they were trying to do was just encourage support for HIV positive brothers and sisters. And also from, you know, our own experiences, as Bonnie would know, I can remember travelling through those years that each year we would lose someone from the parade, you know, or someone would look sick one year and they'd be gone. And that's pretty universal across that community.
What did that time mean to you, Bonnie?
Oh, that was incredible. The Alice Springs that Tim's talking about that was in 93. And it was Everyone's Business. That was amazing. I have a lot of photos from that, Tim, and I do remember strong sounds and vibes from yourself and Matthew and Kylie Minogue. But what did it mean to me? it means everything. It's a formulation of that energy and that pride and that drive. And even when I don't feel like doing the Mardi Gras stuff, and I honour that space that my friends walked in, and that space of knowing that we could either, they're going to attack you because you're blackfella, or they're going to attack you because you blackfella and gay, so they're blackfellas that are attacking you, but it's Australia. And just talking about the 88 and leading up towards after 88 and 89 and 90, they were the Fred Vile days, all of that stuff, and rolling out the little children to hurl that abuse. So when we're talking about the past, it's David Page and Vicky Jones, who I work under now, and that was AH and MRC, Aboriginal Health and Medical Research Council. And I think what's incredibly important when talking about the HIV and everything around those days is a lot of that, even though people don't know this or might not want to talk about it, that drive and that sponsorship stuff came out of those Aboriginal community control, the same as like those positions and stuff that since benefits the AIDS Council of New South Wales, that came from at the time the amazing Dulcie Flowers. We're talking about the 80s and very, very close friends of senior members of our community. And so you kind of see that trickle-down effect. And I just think it's amazing. And that's the stuff, Larissa, that I want young people to know. They're not going to inherit the same atmosphere of why we drive at Timothy, would they? They'd never do it that way.
Because they talk about the Mardi Gras parade and the 78ers, but I think in this community they also talk about the 95ers, which is not the first, because we came together in this hard time, and because, like Bonnie said, there was this space created for us and for the community, there was a couple of weeks, the parade actually became less important. It was this coming together over these few weeks that people have kept those strings. They were meeting one another, but it's almost like, you know, there's now the 95ers. But, of course, there was people before that. Mm. Like women in 92, the Aboriginal women were, you know, extremely strong in stepping out there in the early 90s.
Well, Aboriginal women tend to be a bit like that, don't they, Bonnie? I was going to ask you, I mean, you talk a lot about the really hard politics, the enormous amount of issues you've had to fight on many fronts. When you look at the Mardi Gras now, and obviously it's a huge festival and it's parade and it's, you know, it's a celebration. What does the celebratory part mean for you?
Well, when I can get into the spirited of it overall and transcend the experience of racism in this country, it's pretty bloody good. And I think people will understand that. When I look at and think about what does a celebration mean to me, well, it just doesn't have the same ringtone anymore. But I know it, once I'm there and I'm at that parade and I'm in that, and I have to say, I don't think I've ever chosen to jump on the float, because walking with it, singing with it, there's nothing like it. And I think Tim would say that. And you're there and you can see the look in people's eyes, and it's like a light comes on for the person that it's their first time, and you watch it and you look at them and you go, you got it, eh? You can feel it.
Yeah, what, I was talking to someone the other day, it was like, you know, it's no longer a first time for me, but I remember a first time. And that one of the great joys, like you're saying, is now seeing somebody else have their first time, because you know what it is and go, yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming by and having a chat about this history tonight, both what you've researched and what you've lived. It's a really fascinating part of the history of our community, and one that obviously deserves greater recognition and greater space. So thank you for giving us all a little bit of an insight into it tonight. Researcher for the Mardi Gras Project, Tim Bishop, and long-term participant in the Mardi Gras and advocate for LGBT rights in the Indigenous community, Bonnie Briggs.